It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I am Tony Vernetti from Feds, Federal Employee Defense Services. And today I am filling in for the attorneys at Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. And we have a very exciting show for you today about federal employee benefits. And when I say benefits, I don't mean how much sick or vacation leave you get, federal holidays, your AWS day, telework. I want to talk about benefits in terms of financial and retirement planning and how to prepare for both the expected and the unexpected. And then also how some discretionary insurance products such as disability, life, even professional liability insurance can really assist with this important financial planning. And to assist me with my discussion today, I have three very distinguished guests that I will introduce individually. First, I have Mike Miles in studio with me. Mike specializes in retirement planning and investment management, specifically for federal employees. He is the principal advisor for VeriPlan LLC, and many of you may recognize his name because he writes the Money Matters column for the Federal Times and is a member of the Ask the Experts panel on the Federal Times website. Mike is clearly one of the most recognized experts in the federal financial employee benefit area, and we're really thrilled to have him today. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
Sure. And our other two guests are no slouches either. Both are experts in federal employee benefits, and I invited him here today to talk about some specific insurance solutions for federal employees and what and how they should think about it in their retirement and financial planning. So also in studio, we have my good friend and fellow Nationals fan, Denny Stevens. Denny is the president and founder of All Feds, which provides life insurance solutions to federal employees and their families. Denny, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Tony. Thanks for having me.
And then on the telephone, all the way from San Francisco, we have Jim De La Torre. Jim is the founder and creator of Fed Advantage, which is a disability insurance program specifically designed for federal employees. Good morning, Jim, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Tony. Thanks for inviting me.
You bet. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. If you would like to join our discussion today and speak directly to one of our guests, call our toll-free number at 1-877-936-9333, or you can always email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Mike, I'd like to start our discussion today with you, because I know in your business and your day-to-day work, you have a, in my opinion, a very interesting way of approaching how you give financial advice to federal employees and your clients. And it's, you know, it's one where you're using math, you're using the data, you know, you're actually using some empirical information. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that and just a little bit about, you know, how you get started with federal employees and what you get them thinking about.
Okay. I actually started my practice in financial planning in order to try to bring science and math into the process more. I was originally trained to be a salesman for a large financial services company, one of the largest in the world. And I learned a lot of interesting things there, but it also wasn't what I wanted to do. I have a background in science. And so I wanted to try to bring some analytic methods into the process and in effect, give individuals the ability to analyze the decisions that they make and try to make those decisions in a way that furthers their interests. So it really boiled down to bringing professional pension fund management techniques to individual investors and savers.
And how do you apply that philosophy to how you bring it to the federal sector? Well, let me ask you first, what got you interested in serving federal employees?
Well, I do have I do come from a family that were federal servants. I have a grandfather who passed away a few years ago, but he was a civil servant under the civil service system. So I grew up in that environment. My mother worked for the government when she was younger. And so I had an interest in the beginning. I was comfortable with the discussions about federal pay and benefits to some extent. And then I ran into the Senior Executives Association back in 1998, 1999. And just through a series of kind of trial and error cooperative efforts, they were looking for something. I was interested in trying to provide it for their members. They were a bit skeptical about letting anybody come in and work with their people. So we did kind of a test that lasted a year or so. And the result was that a relationship formed, and I began to focus on that group of people as my primary clients, and that they now comprise probably 98 or 99% of my clients are federal employees or annuitants.
No, the Senior Executives Association is a wonderful association, and or as we call them, SEA. And I understand what you say when you're talking about their skepticism, because I too work with them with my liability company, Feds, and they endorse us. But that says a lot about you, because they do their research. These are the top level executives throughout government. And they just don't endorse or just work with anybody, and so really, in my opinion, is a testament, that you're the real deal. So taking this kind of analytical approach to the federal employee market, what do you see as sort of the biggest kind of problems with the way Feds, approach their finances and their financial planning?
Well, I think that more and more of the responsibility for managing financial outcomes is being delegated from the federal government to employees, and everybody who's involved in FERS knows that. And so they've gone the way of the private sector. And in doing that over the last 20 years, they have given employees the responsibility to become financial managers, pension fund managers in a sense. And unfortunately, very few people are prepared either through education or have the time or interest to put the kind of analysis that's necessary into making a lot of these decisions. Where should you invest your money? How should you allocate your TSP account? How much can you afford to spend when you retire? How much do you need to save to guarantee a certain standard of living in retirement? And so what I see happening in practice is that a lot of these decisions are made emotionally as opposed to analytically. So people choose the investments that they choose the insurance products that they use as much based on the personality of the person proposing the solution, or they read a columnist that they like, or they just like the sound of an emotional appeal and they take it. And a lot of times that works out to be not really in their favor.
Or I used to say, myself, I know enough information to do myself some real damage. And that's what happens. If somebody picks up, a Kiplinger, Fortune 500 magazine, you're in a doctor's office, you read it, here are the top five funds, this is that, everyone talks about this, how hard can this be? You know enough. But the reality of it is, unless you're in it day to day, following it day to day, you don't know enough.
Well, it's...
Or just enough to do real damage.
Right. And one of the biggest problems is that you're made to feel as though you should know how to do all this. Your employer, for example, tells you, and everybody who has a 401k plan account or participates in the TSP is being told by their employer, you ought to know enough to make these decisions for yourself. You want to guarantee income for life after you retire at a certain level? Well, you just need to figure out how to do it, and you should know how to do it. And the fact is that it's a lot different than what a lot of people think it is. If you go look at how pension funds are managed, when they're managed professionally and it's done well, the decisions and the way the money's invested look a lot different than the way the average investor manages their own money.
So what kind of, initial obstacles do you face with a new client, a new federal employee coming in, asking for financial advice?
Well, the first thing I think is that they've got some predisposed ideas about how the investment world works. For example, they've been taught maybe that if you, during the 90s in particular, it was really popular to promise people that if they did enough research, and now that they have the internet available to them, that they could research their way to wealth. And that unfortunately, it's that tends to look true when everybody's just making money because the tide's rising. After the tide goes out, you see all the people stranded that maybe were benefiting from luck rather than skill.
I go back in 1997, where everybody was a day trader, me included.
a lot of professionals took credit for the great outcomes, and they didn't realize that it was, it was a big problem with confusing luck and skill.
Right.
And just because you walk out of the casino a winner doesn't mean you're going to be able to do that when you go back.
And I want to get into that casino analogy that you're alluding to. But we're going to need to take our first break right now. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here with Mike Miles, and we're talking about federal employee benefits and financial planning. We'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and I'm talking with Mike Miles about a variety of financial planning matters for federal employees, and really the kind of philosophy that federal employees should have when they're talking about their finances and their retirement planning. If you have a question or comment, please give us a call toll-free at 877-936-9333, or you can always email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Mike, before we took our break, we were talking a little bit about and laughing a little bit about kind of the philosophy that that people put into investing their money, and how often it's much like a casino gamble, putting money down on a craps table to pass. Come, don't come, and things like that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I feel, interestingly, a lot of people seem to really enjoy that aspect of investing. And it's hard to pry, even when they don't have success, it's hard to pry the decisions out of that sort of mentality. But it is a gambling exercise. It's an exercise in probabilities, and those probabilities can be assessed. They can be quantified, and making the decisions without understanding those probabilities, the risks, the potential returns, is what causes most of the problems in investing. I mean, if there were an easy solution to this, the problem would have been solved two generations ago, but it's still a problem. People, the markets are like a casino, and financial services, the industry is like the casino owner, and they put up lots of games for you to play, their products. There's an endless development of these products going on. They do tend to appeal to emotion. And some of them are very useful, and some of them are pretty damaging. And the problem is that going in and playing that game, whether it's choosing stocks or which insurance to own or how much to save or whether to refinance your mortgage or all these different financial questions, trying to answer those questions is like playing a casino game with your life savings and not having any idea what the odds of the game are, and a lot of times not even understanding the rules of the game. And I just think that's a big mistake. I think that ultimately success financially, just like success in a casino, is the result of a long series of decisions. And in investing, it goes on all your life, and you make an almost infinite number of decisions. I mean, every day you decide not to do anything new is a day you've decided not to do anything new. And so I think that the way you get the best result is by making sure that you look at each and every one of those decisions and put the analysis and understanding into it that's necessary to make that decision the best it can possibly be. So you play the games in the casino with the odds in your favor.
And well, so how does the you know, average federal employee do that? I mean, how do they solve that problem? You know, short of coming to a respected financial planner like yourself, you know. When I was a federal employee, you know, you came in, they gave you, you know, your benefits, you got Fegley B, here's your TSP, I was young, it's going in the C fund, you know, because I got longevity, and I didn't think about it, you know, again, right? You know, never revisited it every year and things like that. You know, what should the federal employee be doing? And how do they kind of do their own, you know, analytical research, and what things should they be thinking about?
Well, I don't know that everybody can do the analytic work themselves. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I exist. But it's not the exercise that a lot of people think it is. I mean, the way to approach this is to start with objectives and to look at where you want to be, what sort of lifestyle you want to live throughout your life, and then to turn those objectives into a series of decisions that support the objective. So this should be an exercise in management by objective. And I use the analogy a lot when I go around and speak that it's like driving a car. And when you're young and you're first starting out, you really don't have a fixed objective. And so you just drive the car and you head in a direction and you respond to what you see out the windows. You drive away from the bad weather. Maybe you see somebody standing by the road waving and pointing, and so you turn because the person looks like they know what they're talking about. But you're really not navigating your way to an objective. You're just driving the car, and you do that for 30 or 40 years, and then you get out, and you go, okay, it's time to retire. Here I am. Now what can I do? Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's the right way to do it. I think that you ought to be – once you retire, the game changes a lot. Now when you miss your target, you're going to find out, okay? You're going to run out of money. And so the margin for error goes away as you approach retirement. But even if you go back to early career employees – It would be beneficial to know that the decision that you're making tomorrow could cost you $100,000 20 years from now, and maybe make a different decision.
Like, oh no, I'm driving a Yugo instead of that Lexus out there.
Right. Well, some people like Yugos, and that's fine too.
But the factory sealed hoods that they come with. What I want to shift a little bit, you know, so much of financial planning, retirement planning, people tend to think of, am I in the right funds? Am I putting enough away? You know, am I diversified enough in my investment? But I want to talk more about kind of the unexpected, you know, maybe in terms of risks, because a lot of people don't think about, you know, the unexpected, you know, that can happen, you know, an early death, you know, God forbid, an accident, disability, legal action, you know, like we see out, you know, here in the press today involving a lot of IRS officials, right. GSA, you know, officials, you know, the stuff that's going on at the SEC, there's, you know, all that stuff can happen, you know, very unexpectedly, you know, and to no fault of your own. So sort of risk planning is a whole nother side of financial planning that I think most federal employees just simply, you know, don't appreciate.
Well, I think it's more than just another side of financial planning. It is the essential core of financial planning. It's funny when people start paying you to deliver the outcomes and your livelihood depends on it, all of a sudden risk starts to really become a big issue. And you become much more concerned about things not working than maybe earning a little extra money that's not needed and taking a huge risk to do that. But one of the first things that everybody should do as part of a plan, and that I always am very concerned about, is identifying any unacceptable risks, any risk that could basically kill a plan, and then finding a way to deal with that risk. And, you know, if it can be, for example, life insurance, if an early death, to me, the way the question that has to be answered, it's actually a multi-part question, is, you know, if would an unexpected and early death result in some unmet financial need for a survivor that would go unmet by existing resources or other resources, then you've got a need for life insurance. Mm-hmm. And so determining whether that need is there is one of the first things we need to do, because that not having that risk covered is a potential deal breaker. All the planning in the world is not going to solve the problem if that eventuality occurs and it's a large enough financial problem that it basically ends the plan. So finding a way to either deal with the risk from existing resources or insure that risk and transfer it to another party is just a standard core part of developing a financial plan if you're really concerned about that plan working out.
And sort of another way, you know, I've heard people say it, or maybe I like to say it, because I'm simple. if there is a risk out there, you know, that you can insure away for a relatively low cost, you should always do that. You know, even if the probability is low that you would need that kind of insurance, when the event happens, it can have, you know, a huge impact, you know, on, you know, retirement, on the end game.
Well, that's exactly right. And look, I would be negligent if I didn't point out to a client who's engaged me to make sure that their standard of living is maintained, the one that they expect. I'd be negligent if I didn't point out those risks and say, you know what, even though this is a low probability event, mm-hmm. that for starters, that's what makes it insurable in the mm-hmm. first place. If it were a very high probability event, it's almost impossible to insure mm-hmm. against it. But I'd be negligent. And what's amazing, I guess, to me is that many people don't hold themselves to the same standard. You know,
right.
they play pretty fast and loose with these things. And then they're surprised when they do get caught by the unexpected. If you look at a low probability event that's large, the cost to insure it is usually relatively low.
Right.
I mean, the cost is usually a direct reflection.
Well, so many people, I found the barrier, and I see this in, you know, my business with professional liability insurance, where people have to view themselves as doing something wrong, is they don't think it's going to happen to them. This is not going to happen to me. I'm not going to get disabled. You know, it's not going to be this. You're not going to be that. I don't need to worry about that. Or it's so unpleasant, I don't want to worry about that. And it's interesting, I found in doing a little bit of research for the show, and going back and reading some of your articles, Mike, in the Federal Times, and some of the analytical research that the data research that you did. And I would encourage everybody to get online and check these articles out on Mike's website, which is www.variplan.com. That's VARIplan.com. You know, particularly with, I think if I remember correctly, with disability insurance and liability insurance, you did an analysis where, look, if you paid for 25, 30 years into some of these insurance plans and never needed the insurance, you were only going to affect your retirement income by 1%. Whereas if you did not have the insurance and you got affected by one of these life events, disability, you know, a major legal action where you had to, you know, shell out $50,000, $100,000 of your own money, it had a much more dramatic impact, you know, on your retirement savings, up to 25, 30, you know, sometimes, you know, even higher.
Well, I was very surprised, actually, at the outcome of some of this research. And When I looked at disability, for example, under FERS, I just looked at a 5-year disability and what the impact that a 5-year disability would have if it were sustained by an early career FERS employee, you know, what we saw was it would handicap the retirement standard of living for, you know, as much as 75 or more percent. And there was huge impact, not necessarily today, but just from that point forward. And the same was true with liability. You know, a significant expense in liability, you know, $50,000 expense in liability could cut your retirement in half, your standard of living in retirement in half. And that's the way these decisions should be made, looked at in the context of the big picture.
Right. You know, and I, you know, in my former life where I practiced law and I defended, you know, federal employees day to day, and, you know, and I saw how much it costs, I used to routinely say, I couldn't afford me. You know, I would just walk out, you know, go get another job, you know, but, you know, a lot of federal officials, you don't have that luxury. You know, you've worked 20, 25 years, you're invested in what you do, you're a special agent, you know, you're highly trained, you know, this is what, you know, you live to do. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to fight, you know, for those things. And it's, you know, nice to know that there are some, you know, insurance products out there that will help you. And we're going to get into that in the second half of the show, but we're going to have to stop here for our second break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about federal employee benefits and planning. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Geico's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from Geico. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I am Tony Vernetti, and we're talking about federal employee benefits, financial planning in terms of insurances and planning for, you know, both the expected and the unexpected. I want to bring Jim DeLaTorre on to our discussion here. Jim is a chartered retirement planning counselor that specializes in federal benefits. And Jim has worked with a product that they call Fed Advantage to develop a disability insurance product that's specifically designed for federal employees. And one of the reasons are that, you know, one of these is needed is a lot of federal employees feel that they're covered, you know, with disability or what they have with their benefits, you know, through OPM and what have you. But that's not necessarily the case. Jim, I wonder if you could set that up for us.
Sure, Tony. I think the biggest misconception for federal employees is they don't understand that disability retirement and disability insurance are not the same thing. And because they have the same first name, they dismiss disability retirement as being like a disability insurance when in fact it's not. And unfortunately, they really don't find out that there's a difference until they suffer a type of a condition that requires them to apply for disability retirement, and they move into the process, if you will, of filing for a pension plan. And federal employees, as part of their benefit package, have leave and disability retirement. Leave is their what we would call their short-term solution, and disability retirement is their long-term solution. The problem with those two programs is, first, they don't work together. Qualifying for one doesn't mean you qualify for the other. And because of their strict definition of how they're set up, they often leave employees with gaps where they have periods of time where they have no income. And most Americans, whether they're federal employees or not, are really not prepared to go months without an income waiting to be approved for a product. And so as a result of that, employees sometimes are under a false assumption that they have a protection behind them that really isn't truly there.
Right, and like, and you hear, you know, things with laws such as FEMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, and the federal Family Friendly Leave Acts that they have. While these guarantee time off, you know, 12 administrative work weeks for certain big events, and then you have entitled to sick leave and your annual leave. But it, what people don't appreciate, when your leave runs out, you're not getting paid anymore. You know, it's only a guarantee that, you know, your job's being guaranteed. You know, you're in a leave without pay status, not getting paid.
Exactly. And family medical leave is, while it's a great benefit for an employee, doesn't necessarily provide an income stream for an employee who goes out on a disability and will not provide one.
And so how does the Fed Advantage product sort of bridge that gap and fill this void?
Well, the idea behind the development of a disability product for federal employees really comes from a background of having a number of friends who work in the federal market. And my personal background is with employee benefits and developing employee benefit plans for companies. And when they would come to me to ask for advice on what they should do with some of their benefit packages, it became clear to me that disability insurance is not part of their benefit package. So we created a supplemental program because employees do have a base of benefits. There is a leave benefit that will pay. There is a disability retirement that they may qualify for, which will provide a benefit. And the idea was, rather than try to put a full-blown program in place, what we decided to do was to come up with a program that was really designed to fill in the gaps when the leave and the disability retirement were not active, that there was a benefit that would create income continuation for an employee so that they were never at a point of time where there wasn't an income coming in. And that's the premise around the product.
Why do you think there is that gap in the federal benefits? I have my own belief, which is at some point you do have the leave policies, and at some point they want to push people or encourage people just to file for permanent disability, OPM disability. But what's your thoughts on that?
Well, the disability retirement are going to fall more directly back to that the employer has to hold a spot for an employee if they're out on leave. And by moving them out to disability retirement will allow them the ability to replace that person with a full-time worker. Getting them into the disability retirement moves them off their existing budget and moves them into OPM, where the federal government's made national budget, which is a savings to the agency. So there's an incentive from the employer to get the employee into disability retirement if they can.
Mike, if I can, bring you in here a little bit. We've talked about your research that you did, and we talked about the 1%, and we did the difference. And Jim's talking about this sort of gap in federal benefits for disability type issues. But it's probably not necessarily one size fits all. Every federal employee, we don't recommend it across the board. I think everybody needs to look at, or do you, look at their personal situation.
Well, I think that insuring against disability is important. I mean, insuring your income against disability, because disability is one of the more significant risks that you face in terms of probability. It has two things. It has two characteristics that make it a big threat. One is that there's a relatively high probability compared to a lot of insurable things. You're fairly likely to become disabled or unable to work for at least some period of time, not permanently, but even for a few years, than you are a lot of other insured risks. And then the potential cost, if it does happen, is quite high. And if you look at FERS disability retirement and how that plays out, it's substantially less. Your income would be substantially less than the typical private sector employee who's covered by an employer's disability income plan.
Right. And it's taxed. And a lot of people don't realize that.
Right. And so you're living on less than half of your income for several years at a time. That handicaps your future financially in a way that is going to be difficult or impossible to recover from. And so trying to get that income, if you do become disabled, up as high as you possibly can, I think is a goal. And so I think it's more important the earlier you are in your career. As you approach retirement, it becomes less significant. But for younger employees in particular, it's an essential tool.
Well, and I know I'm putting you guys on the spot a little bit with this question, but I'm more curious than anything. Why do you think there is that gap in federal benefits just because it is, or is any intentional?
I don't know. Maybe Jim's probably got a little more insight into that than I do.
Well, yeah, I don't know if I would know the actual answers to why there's a gap. I mean, I've certainly, I wouldn't know the answer to that.
Well, it's important. I mean, what we're trying to do, today, and I want to be, clear to everybody, it's not a sales show. We're really trying to provide information that employee understand, what these potential risks and exposures are out there, because not a lot of employees are aware that there is this kind of gap, in the event of a disability. Whereas I think in the private sector, most folks are pretty well educated you know, that they're usually underinsured as far as disability insurance is concerned, and they're looking to remedy that, you know, as more information is put out there. Whereas in the federal sector, you know, while the information, you know, is out there that Americans in general are uninsured as far as disability is concerned, there's the misnomer or misconception that federal employees feel because of their benefits they're fully covered.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. I think the tendency I've seen with people I've worked with is to just assume that federal benefits are so strong that there's nothing to worry about. What's interesting about this whole thing is that in the private sector, people struggle to get as much disability insurance as they can possibly get. And insurers are very reluctant to give them more than, 60% in the private sector is about as much as you can expect to insure. Where in the federal government with supplemental insurance, you can easily get to 60 or even more.
Right. And it's the same dichotomy, you know, in my business, in professional liability insurance, you know, whereas in the private sector, you know, it's called E&O insurance, and everybody needs it. You know, everybody needs it to work, and they get it. They get, you know, big things. And there's the misnomer in the federal component that you don't need it, that you're covered, you know, that as long as you're in the scope of your employment, you can't be sued. You know, well, as we know, that's not true. You know, federal employees, you know, can be sued. They don't have absolute immunity for what we call personal capacity lawsuits. They only have, you know, qualified immunity. And federal employees, you know, can be investigated, you know, for a lot of, you know, administrative misconduct things. You know, it runs the gamut. All you have to do is open the Washington Post, and you know, there's, you know, a federal employee in there, you know, getting in trouble for one thing or another. And it may not be necessary because they did anything wrong, you know, it's just because, you know, the intense, you know, political and public, you know, exposure on that. You know, when anybody puts a magnifying glass on you like that, none of us are perfect. So which is why it's, you know, it's nice to know that some of these, like the disabilities, professional liability policies, you know, are available. But Jim, I want to circle back to the disability product again, because it not only does it fill in the gaps, doesn't it also assist, you know, if somebody is going long-term OPM disability?
Absolutely. And to your point, the difference between disability retirement and disability insurance, probably the key central piece of the difference between the two products, is that a disability retirement is to put somebody out on disability, to retire them out on a pension. And when you put somebody out on a pension, there's a paycheck coming in and they're left on their own. With disability insurance, it's not only about income replacement, it's probably more about providing disability management services for employees to help them through this process, whether that process is going through the paperwork of filing for not only FERS disability retirement, but through Social Security as well. It's a very tedious process, a lot of documentation, a lot of forms. Having a service there to provide an average person to go through that process is a huge benefit. In addition to that, the disability management features of these programs help employees get back on their feet and back to work. The reality is, with the advancements in medical technology today, it's becoming more and more apparent that people who are disabled are able to get back in some capacity into the workforce. Having a company retrain them, to help them identify careers that they can get into, puts them back on their feet, back to work and part of society again, which is a huge value added, one that you really can't quantify with a price, but very few people are satisfied with just receiving a paycheck from a disability insurance company. They really do want to become part of society again and get back into their lives, get back into saving for retirement, and get back to some sense of normalcy. And disability insurance products help you do that through their vocational and rehabilitative programs.
And, you know, an OPM, the disability program with OPM, really does contemplate that, which is why you're permitted to, even though if you're on the OPM disability rolls, you are permitted to go out there and get a job and earn at least up to 80% of, you know, what you were making, you know, as a federal employee. So, you know, the end game, you know, is obviously to hopefully get you back to gainfully employed and work, a little different than, say, workers' comp, where you can't work at all and it's, you know, you're on kind of this permanent, the permanent roles. We're going to take our last break here in a second, Jim, but I want you to just give our listeners a little bit more information on how they can obtain more information about Fed Advantage and these disability products.
Okay. You can visit our website at www.fedadvantage.com, and we'd be more than happy to pass on any information you have on the product.
Okay, we're going to stop here and hear another word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll bring Denny on to talk about life insurance. He's been sitting here very patiently for the whole hour. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym. And it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are entering our last segment of the show, and I saved the best for last. We got Denny Steven, who's the president and founder of All Feds Insurance. Denny is a chartered life underwriter with over 41 years of experience in placing federal employees in a variety of life policies. 41 years.
It's a long time.
That's a long time, young friend. I want to set this up kind of the life insurance basics, because this really, and I consider myself to know a few things about a few things, was new to me when I was a federal employee, that you think you come into government, they've got this, you know, federal employee group life insurance plan, or FEGLI, it's called, you know, and that's what you get, and that's going to be, you know, the best benefit. I don't have to worry about, you know, all that other stuff out there, New York Life, you know, whatever. But it turns out, if you're relatively healthy, the FEGLI B is probably not your best option.
Well, correct. You're a perfect example. When you started with the government 25 years ago, you just signed up. You checked the box, yes. If you had a family, you signed up for option B. It's guaranteed issue, so that's a good thing, in addition to the basic. So, and then you move along, and every 5 years, it starts going up, and one day you reach 50 and you get a call from your HR department and said, Tony, it just went up 60%, and 55, another 60, and so forth. So while it's a good plan in that it gives you the benefits early on, it's guaranteed issue, you're painting yourself into a corner a little bit in that the prices keep going up, and all of us will reach a day at one point, not always while we're still working, but into retirement, where you're going to cross that line and go into the uninsurable category. So if you haven't made any changes in your program, now you have no options other than option B. So we operate on a simple premise that every federal employee should at least look at the alternatives to FEGLI option B. May not work for everybody, but it'll work for most, and the savings for healthy employees are incredible. It's not at all unusual. In fact, it's fairly normal for people over 55 to realize the savings of over $100,000 to $150,000, guaranteed savings over 20 years, obviously based on higher salaries, higher amounts. But as you know, we recently finished one client. His guaranteed savings for a 55-year-old is $570,000 savings in premium. So it's something everyone needs to look into. And as you get closer to retirement, it's just a must. You have to find out where your money's coming from as you get into retirement. And people like Mike will tell you, it's one thing to plan your money. It's another thing to come up with extra money to plan. So that's our goal, is to try and free up money for you in retirement or as you get into retirement, so you have it for your personal use.
Before we bash Fegley B, option B too much, I mean, there are some positives, with it.
Absolutely. The positives are, as I mentioned, it's if you sign up in a timely fashion when you start with the government, it's guaranteed issues, so no health questions. It goes up with your salary automatically. Your salary over 20 years may double. No questions asked. Your insurance has gone up with it. You can get up to 5 times your income. Again, no questions asked. So all those are good things. And then for those who do have health concerns, it's also guaranteed that you can take it into retirement. You don't lose it when you retire. You're not going to pay extra as you get into retirement. But what you are going to be subject to are these very substantial 5-year rate increases. And those won't change whether you're retired or active. That's the way the plan is set up. It's a group plan. It comes with all the benefits inherent in the group plans with the guaranteed issue. But it also has a lot of the problems inherent with group plans.
So, like you said, everybody's, personal situation changes, evolves over time. And eventually, maybe you're not in the best place to go get life insurance. So when I talk to my friends who are in the federal government about this, as I learned this through my association, with you, I hear that all the time. They say, well, I want to stay, keep my Fegley B. Because when I retire, I want to be able to have that guaranteed issue. Maybe I won't be in the best health then. I'll be older, and things like that. But what I think what people, miss, if you've got a 20-year term that you, can carry you into retirement, you're going to be able to have a lot of the same flexibility and a lot of the same options at much lower cost.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cost,
you can lock in these lower rates for 20 or even 30 years. So you'll have the peace of mind knowing as you go forward into retirement, what your insurance premiums are going to be. You've made that switch before your health made it impossible to make the switch. Because once you go past that line, very seldom do you come back from being uninsurable to insurable. It happens, but very rarely. So you need to at least look at it. And then once you look at it and you do your comparison, then you've got the information on which to base the decision. It's up to you then. You can decide.
It's like once you have diabetes, you have it.
That's right. That's exactly right. But just coincidentally, speaking of diabetes, just recently had a diabetic, 60 pounds overweight, age 62, and he came to us, and his savings was almost $80,000 over 15 years. So everybody should at least take a look. That's all we're suggesting.
That's what we're trying to tell people, educate, folks, is that it's a group plan. Fegley B is a group plan, so in order to price it, appropriately, they're taking the good with the bad.
Yeah.
If you're part of the good, you're paying for the bad. If you're in relatively good health, you ought to at least consider.
And the differences aren't as great when you're younger as you would expect because the prices are lower. But as you get towards retirement, you need to take a look. There's a lot of money that can be freed up for your retirement.
And it's real numbers. Tell people it's refinancing your home, from a 5%, 4% mortgage down
absolutely.
To something
it's $400, $500, $600 a month.
And that's real,
into
real
your
money.
Retirement. So
that could be your retirement boat. Mike, let me ask you, when you're talking to federal employees about their life insurance needs, what are some of the guidance, that you give them? I mean, is there a set thing like everybody needs X?
No, actually, it varies from individual to individual, and it really depends on what your goals are for survivors and what the survivor. Then the survivor, by the way, is the one. The potential survivor is the one who should be making the decisions primarily. Should certainly be involved because they're the ones who are going to be living with the standard of life that whatever is left after somebody dies unexpectedly will provide. But I do like term insurance. I think term insurance, guaranteed term insurance, is if there's a need, that's the place to start. I'm not a big fan of a lot of the varieties of life insurance that have been rolled out. I don't think they're in your best interest in most cases. I certainly don't like insurance products, which are all about guarantees that like to mix in non-guaranteed things like investments that you direct yourself and so forth. Right. I think that, you know, if you go to the well for guarantees, you want to stay within the range of products that, that gives you full guarantees.
And Denny, in a few minutes that we have left, I know that Fegley B has some specific application, unfortunate application to women. You know, who need like.
Yeah, we wrote an article last year, late in the year, and the whole premise of the article was that women are paying an inordinate amount for their Fegley B. It's one thing that men can maybe do better outside the Fegley B, but women don't get the 30% credit that they receive in the commercial marketplace due to the actuarial tables. So they're paying way too much, and women need to look into it. It's just. Again, just do your research, do your due diligence, but simple statement, women pay way too much for Fegley option B. It's easy to see.
So I mean, and there, and I know there are some other applications, unique life insurance applications as they specifically apply to women that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, and then this last point is a little more controversial, and in fact, Mike and I may even agree, pretty sure that we do. But I think that you can should take a hard look if you're a healthy female retiring at 56, 57, as many of you can, into the survivor benefit, area of survivor benefit where you leave X amount of half your retirement for your spouse. In many cases, a female employee will be 3 to 4 years younger than her male spouse, and in many cases, in better health. And it skews the numbers so that the survivor benefit may not be the best option, only suggesting that you should do your own research and take a look at it.
And how can our listeners, they want to check this out, they want to, you know, see what's going to be best for them, you know, how can they get in touch with you, get on your website?
Yeah, just go to www.allfeds.com or give us a buzz at 888-330-1790. But you can go to the website, and it's pretty non-threatening. You can do your own research without talking to anybody. And then if you're interested, you can follow through and contact us.
Excellent. Mike, why don't you give our listeners some little more information about how they can get in touch with you and your services?
Well, the easiest thing to do is to go to my website, which is www.variplan.com. That's V-A-R-I-P-L-A-N.com. I do have a searchable archive there of everything I've written for the Federal Times, but it's not on the first page. You have to click through to any of the back pages, and you'll see archive in the upper right.
Hey, Jim, are you still with us?
Still with you. Jim,
why don't you remind our listeners how they can get in touch with you and get more information about disability needs?
Sure. It's www.fedadvantage.com. You can go out onto the website, and you can receive a cost versus benefits quote, and you can give us a buzz, and we'll be more than happy to follow up with you and answer any questions that you have.
That's great. So I didn't get a whole lot of opportunity to talk about my company, Feds, and professional liability insurance, which is fine because I think some of this other information that we provided was far more important. But for those of you who are listening and would like to get more information about professional liability insurance, what it covers, what it costs, it's very inexpensive. The agency pays for half of it. You can get more information on our website. And you can also get information about all the products that you heard here today, the disability, the AllFed stuff on our website as well, which is www.fedsprotection.com. That's F-E-D-S, protection.com. Or you can always call the office at 866-955-3337. That's 866-955-FEDS. So that's all the time we have. Thanks, guys, for coming on.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you for joining us on Fed Talk. And it's a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend, everybody.